came back. They moved toward one another. Dad collapsed to his knees in front of Mama, his knees cracking on the wood so loudly Lenny knew there would be bruises tomorrow. Mama moved closer, put her hands in his hair. He buried his face in her stomach, started to shake and cry.
I'm so sorry. I just love you so much. It makes me crazy. Crazier.
He looked up, crying harder now.
I didn't mean it.
I know, baby. Mama knelt down, took him in her arms, rocked him back and forth. Lenny felt the sudden fragility of her world, of the world itself. She barely remembered before. Maybe she didn't remember it at all, in fact. Maybe the images she did have, Dad lifting her onto his shoulders, pulling petals from a daisy, holding a buttercup to her chin, reading her a bedtime story, maybe these were all images she'd taken from pictures and imbued with an imagined life. She didn't know. How could she? Mama wanted Lenny to look away as easily as Mama did, to forgive even when the apology tendered was as thin as fishing line and as breakable as a promise to do better. For years, for her whole life, Lenny had done just that. She loved her parents, both of them. She had known, without being told, that the darkness in her dad was bad and the things he did were wrong, but she believed her mama's explanations too, that dad was sick and sorry, that if they loved him enough, he would get better and it would be like before. Only Lenny didn't believe that anymore. The truth was this. Winter had only just begun. The cold and darkness would go on for a long, long time, and they were alone up here, trapped in this cabin with Dad. With no 911 and no one to call for help. All this time, Dad had taught Lenny how dangerous the outside world was. The truth was that the biggest danger of all was in her own home. 10.
Come on, sleepyhead, Mama called up bright and early the next morning. Time for school.
It sounded so ordinary, something every mother said to every 14-year-old, but Lenny heard the words behind the words, the please let's pretend, that formed a dangerous pact. Mama wanted to induct Lenny into some terrible silent club to which Lenny didn't want to belong. She didn't want to pretend what had happened was normal, but what was she, a kid, supposed to do about it? Lenny dressed for school and climbed cautiously down the loft ladder, afraid to see her father. Mama stood beside the card table, holding a plate of pancakes bracketed by strips of crispy bacon. Her face was swollen on the right side, purple seeping along the temple. Her right eye was black and puffy, barely open. Lenny felt a rise of anger. It unsettled and confused her. Fear and shame, she understood. Fear made you run and hide, and shame made you stay quiet. But this anger wanted something else. Release.
Don't, Mama said. Please.
Don't what? Lenny said.
You're judging me.
It was true, Lenny realized with surprise. She was judging her mother, and it felt disloyal, cruel even. She knew that Dad was sick. Lenny bent down to replace the paperback book under the table's rickety leg.
It's more complicated than you think. He doesn't mean to do it, honestly. And sometimes I provoke him. I don't mean to. I know better.
Lenny sighed at that, hung her head. Slowly, she got back to her feet and turned to face her mother.
But we're in Alaska now, Mama. It's not like we can get help if we need it. Maybe we should leave.
She hadn't known it was even in her head until she heard herself say the terrible words.
There's a lot more winter to come. I love him. You love him.
It was true, but was it the right answer?
Besides, we don't have anywhere to go, and no money to go with. Even if I wanted to run home with my tail between my legs, how would I do it? We'd have to leave everything we own here and hike to town and get a ride to Homer and then have my parents wire us enough money for a plane ticket. Would they help us?
Maybe, but at what price?
And
Mama paused, drew in a breath.
He would never take me back. Not if I did that. It would break his heart, and no one will ever love me like he does. He's trying so hard. You saw how sorry he was. There it was, the sad truth. Mama loved him too much to leave him. Still, even now, with her face bruised and swollen, maybe what she's always said was true. Maybe she couldn't breathe without him. Maybe she'd wilt like a flower without the sunshine of his adoration. Before Lenny could say, "Is that what love is?" the cabin door opened, bringing a rush of icy air with it, a swirl of snow. Dad entered the cabin and shut the door behind him. Removing his gloves, blowing into the chapel of his bare hands, he stomped the snow from his mucklucks. It gathered at his feet, white for a heartbeat, before it melted into puddles. His woolen toque was white with snow, as were his bushy mustache and beard. He looked like a mountain man. His jeans appeared almost frozen.
"There's my little librarian," he said, giving her a sad, almost desperate smile. "I did your chores this morning, fed the chickens and goats. Mom said you needed your sleep."
Lenny saw his love for her, shining through his regret. It eroded her anger, made her question everything again. He didn't want to hurt Mama, didn't mean to. He was sick. "You're going to be late for school," Mom said quietly. "Here, take your breakfast with you." Lenny gathered up her books and her Winnie the Pooh lunchbox and layered up in outerwear, boots, Kiviet yarn toque, Cowichan sweater, gloves. She ate a rolled-up jam-smeared pancake as she headed for the door and walked out into a white world. Her breath clouded in front of her. She saw nothing but falling snow and the man breathing beside her. The VW bus slowly sketched itself into existence, already running. She reached out with her gloved hand and opened the passenger door. It took a couple of tries in the cold, but the old metal door finally creaked open, and Lenny tossed her backpack and lunchbox on the floor and climbed up onto the torn vinyl seat. Dad climbed into the driver's seat and started the wipers. The radio came on, blastingly loud. It was the Peninsula Pipeline morning broadcast. Messages for people living in the bush without telephones or mail service.
"And to Maurice Laveau in McCarthy, your mom says to call your brother. He's feeling poorly."
All the way to school, Dad said nothing. Lenny was so deep in her own thoughts, she was surprised when he said,
"We're here."
She looked up, saw the school in front of her. The wipers made the building appear in a foggy fan and then disappear.
"Lenora."
She didn't want to look at him. She wanted to be Alaska pioneer woman survivor of Armageddon strong, to let him know that she was angry, let it be a sword she could wield. But then he said her name again, steeped in contrition. She turned her head. He was twisted around so that his back was pressed to the door. With the snow and fog outside, he looked vibrant, his black hair, his dark eyes, his thick black mustache and beard.
"I'm sick, Red. You know that. The shrink calls it gross stress reaction. That's just a bunch of bullshit words, but the flashbacks and nightmares are real. I can't get some really bad shit out of my head, and it makes me crazy. Especially now, with money so tight."
"Drinking doesn't help," Lenny said, crossing her arms.
"No, it doesn't. Neither does this weather. And I'm sorry. I'm so damn sorry. I'll stop drinking. It will never happen again. I swear it by how much I love you both."
"Really?"
"I'll try harder, Red. I promise. I love your mom like..."
His voice dropped to a whisper.
"She's my heroine. You know that."
Lenny knew it wasn't a good thing, not a normal mom and dad thing, to compare your love to a drug that could hollow your body and fry your brain and leave you for dead. But they said it to each other all the time. They said it the way Ally McGraw in Love Story said love means never having to say you're sorry, as if it were gospel true. She wanted his regret, his shame, and sadness to be enough for her. She wanted to follow her mother's lead, as she always had. She wanted to believe that last night had been some terrible anomaly and that it wouldn't happen again. He reached out, touched her cold cheek.
"You know how much I love you."
"Yeah," she said.
"It won't happen again."
She had to believe him, to believe in him. What would her world be without that? She nodded and got out of the bus. She trudged through the snow and climbed the steps and entered the warm school. Silence greeted her. No one was talking. Students were in their seats, and Ms. Rhodes was at the chalkboard, writing, "World War II, Alaska was the only state invaded by Japanese." The scritch, scritch, scritch of her chalk was the only sound in the room. None of the kids was talking or giggling or shoving each other. Matthew sat at his desk. Lenny hung her Cowichan sweater on a hook alongside someone's parka and stomped the snow from her bunny boots. No one turned to look at her. She put away her lunchbox and headed to her desk, taking her seat next to Matthew. "Hey," she said. He gave her a barely there smile and didn't make eye contact. "Hey." Ms. Rhodes turned to face the students. Her gaze landed on Matthew, softened. She cleared her throat. "Okay, for Axel, Matthew, and Lenny, turn to page 172 of your state history books. On the morning of June 6, 1942, 500 Japanese soldiers invaded Kiska Island in the Aleutian chain. It is the only battle of that war fought on American soil. Many people have forgotten it, but..." Lenny wanted to reach under the table and hold Matthew's hand to feel the comfort of a friend's touch, but what if he pulled away? What would she say then? She couldn't complain that her family had turned out to be fragile and that she no longer felt safe in her home, not after what he'd been through. She could have said it before, maybe, when life had felt different for both of them, but not now, when he was so broken he couldn't even sit up straight. She almost said, "It will get better," to him, but then she saw the tears in his eyes and she closed her mouth. Neither one of them needed platitudes right now. What they needed was help. In January, the weather got worse. Cold and darkness isolated the Albright family even more. Feeding the wood stove became priority number one, a constant, round-the-clock chore. They had to chop and carry and stack a huge amount of wood each day just to survive. And as if all of that weren't stressful enough, on bad nights, nightmare nights, Dad woke them in the middle of the night to pack and repack their bug-out bags, to test their preparedness, to take their weapons apart and put them back together. Each day, the sun set before 5 p.m. and didn't rise until 10 a.m., giving them a grand total of 6 hours of daylight and 16 hours of darkness a day. Inside the cabin, the Dixie cup showed no new green starts. Dad spent hours hunched over his ham radio, talking to Mad Earl and Clyde, but more and more of the world was cut away. Nothing came easily, not getting water or cutting wood or feeding the animals or going to school. But worst of all was the rapidly emptying root cellar. They had no vegetables anymore, no potatoes or onions or carrots. They were almost to the end of their fish stores, and a single caribou haunch hung in the cache. Since they ate almost nothing but protein, they knew the meat wouldn't last long. Her parents fought constantly about the lack of money and supplies. Dad's anger, kept barely in check since the funeral, was slowly escalating again. Lenny could feel it uncoiling, taking up space. She and Mama moved cautiously, tried never to aggravate him. Today, Lenny woke in the dark, ate breakfast and dressed for school in the dark, and arrived at her classroom in the dark. The bleary-eyed sun didn't appear until past 10 o'clock, but when it did show up, sending streamers of brittle yellow light into the shadowy, lantern and wood stove-lit classroom, everyone perked up. "It's a sunny day. The weatherman was right," Ms. Rhodes said from her place at the front of the classroom. Lenny had been in Alaska long enough to know that a sunny, blue-skied January day was noteworthy. "I think we need to get out of this classroom, get a little air in our lungs and some sunshine on our faces, blow out the winter cobwebs. I've planned a field trip." Axel groaned. He hated anything and everything that had to do with school. He peered through the rat's nest fringe of black hair he never washed.
"Oh, come on. Can't we just go home early? I could go ice fishing."
Ms. Rhodes ignored the scruffy-haired teenager.
"The older of you, Matthew, Axel, and Lenny, help the little ones put on their coats and get their backpacks."
I'm not helping,
Axel said flatly.
Let the lovebirds do everything.
Lenny's face flamed at the comment. She didn't look at Matthew.
Fine, whatever, Ms. Rhodes said. You can go home.
Axel didn't need more encouragement. He grabbed his parka and left the school in a rush. Lenny got up from her seat and went to help Martha and Agnes with their parkas. No one else had shown up for school today. The trip from Bear Cove must have proven too harsh. She turned back, saw Matthew standing by his desk, shoulders slumped, dirty hair fallen across his eyes. She went to him, reached out, touched his flannel sleeve.
You want me to get you your coat?
He tried to smile.
Yeah, thanks.
She got Matthew's camo parka and handed it to him.
Okay, everyone, let's go,
Ms. Rhodes said. She led the students out of the classroom and into the bright, sunlit day. They marched through town and down to the harbor, where a beaver float plane was docked. The plane was dented up and in need of paint. It rolled and creaked and pulled at its lines with every slap of the incoming tide. At their approach, the plane's door opened, and a wiry man with a bushy white beard jumped down onto the dock. He wore a battered trucker's cap and mismatched boots. The smile he gave them was so big it bunched up his cheeks and turned his eyes into slits.
Kids, this is Dieter Mance from Homer. He used to be a Pan Am pilot. Climb aboard, Ms. Rhodes said.
To Dieter, she said, Thanks, man. I appreciate this. She glanced worriedly back at Matthew.
We needed to clear our heads a bit.
The old man nodded.
My pleasure, Tika.
In her previous life, Lenny wouldn't have believed this man had been a captain at Pan Am. But up here, lots of people had been one thing on the outside and become another in Alaska. Large Marge used to be a big city prosecutor and now took showers at the laundromat and sold gum. And Natalie had gone from teaching economics at a university to captaining her own fishing boat. Alaska was full of unexpected people, like the woman who lived in a broken-down school bus at Anchor Point and Red Palms. Rumor had it that she used to be a cop in New York City. Now she walked around with a parrot on her shoulder. Everyone up here had two stories, the life before and the life now. If you wanted to pray to a weirdo god or live in a school bus or marry a goose, no one in Alaska was going to say crap to you. No one cared if you had an old car on your deck, let alone a rusted fridge. Any life that could be imagined could be lived up here. Lenny stepped up into the plane, ducking her head, bending in half. Once inside, she took a seat in the middle row and snapped her seatbelt in place. Ms. Rhodes sat down beside her. Matthew lumbered past them, head down, not making eye contact.
Tom says he's not talking much,
Ms. Rhodes said to Lenny, leaning close.
I don't know what he needs,
Lenny said, turning back, watching Matthew take a seat and strap his seatbelt tight.
A friend,
Ms. Rhodes said, but it was a stupid answer, the kind of thing adults said, obvious. But what was that friend supposed to say? The pilot climbed aboard and strapped himself in and put on a headset, then started the engine. Lenny heard Martha and Agnes giggling in their seats behind her. The float plane engine hummed, the metal all around her rattled. Waves slapped the floats. The pilot was saying something about seat cushions and what to do in case of an unscheduled water landing.
Wait, that means a crash. He's talking about what to do if we crash,
she said, feeling the start of panic.
We'll be fine, Ms. Rhodes said. You can't be Alaskan and be afraid of small planes. This is how we get around.
Lenny knew it was true. With so little of the state accessible by roads, boats and planes were important up here. In the winter, the vastness of Alaska was connected by frozen rivers and lakes. In the summer, all of that fast-moving water separated and isolated them. Bush planes helped get them around. Still, she hadn't been in an airplane before, and it felt remarkably unsteady and unreliable. She clutched the armrests and held on. She tried to sweep fear out of her mind as the plane rambled past the breakwater, clattered hard, and began lifting into the sky. The plane swayed sickeningly, leveled out. Lenny didn't open her eyes. If she did, she knew she'd see things that scared her. Bolts that could pop out, windows that could crack, mountains they could crash into. She thought about that plane that had crashed in the Andes a few years ago. The survivors had become cannibals. Her fingers ached. That was how tightly she was holding on. "Open your eyes," Ms. Rhodes said. "Trust me." She opened her eyes, pushed the vibrating curls out of her face. Through a circle of plexiglass, the world was something she'd never seen before. Blue, black, white, purple. From this vantage point, the geographical history of Alaska came alive for her. She saw the violence of its birth, volcanoes like Mounts Redoubt and Augustine erupting, mountain peaks thrust up from the sky and then worn down by rocky blue glaciers, fjords sculpted by rivers and moving ice. She saw Homer, huddled on a strip of land between high sandstone bluffs, fields covered in snow, and the spit pointing out into the bay. Glaciers had formed all of this landscape, cut through and crunched forward, hollowing out deep bays, leaving mountains on either side. The colors were spectacular, saturating. Across the blue bay, the Kenai Mountains rose like something out of a fairy tale, white saw-like blades that pushed high, high into the blue sky. In places, the glaciers on their steep sides were the pale blue of robin's eggs. The mountains expanded, swallowed the horizon. Jagged white peaks striated by black crevasses and turquoise glaciers. "Wow," she said, pressing closer to the window. They flew close to mountain peaks. And then they were descending, gliding lower over an inlet. Snow blanketed everything, lay in glittering patches on the beach, turned to ice and slush by the water. The float plane swerved and banked, lifted up again, and flew over a thicket of white trees. She saw a huge bull moose walking toward the bay. They were over an inlet and descending fast. She clutched the armrests again, closed her eyes, prepared. They landed with a hard thump, and waves pounded the pontoons. The pilot killed the engine, jumped out of the plane, splashing into the ice-cold water, dragging the float plane higher onto the shore, tying it to a fallen log. Slush floated around his ankles. Lenny got out of the plane carefully. Nothing was more dangerous up here than getting wet in the winter, walked along the float, and jumped out onto the slushy beach. Matthew was right behind her. Ms. Rhodes gathered the few students together on the icy shore.
"Okay, kids, the littles and I are going to hike over to the ridge. Matthew, you and Lenny just go exploring. Have some fun."
Lenny looked around. The beauty of this place, the majesty of it, was overwhelming. A deep and abiding peace existed here. There were no human voices, no thumping footsteps, no laughter or engines running. The natural world spoke loudest here. The breathing of the tide across the rocks, the slap of water on the float plane's pontoons, the distant barking of sea lions lumped together on a rock being circled by chattering gulls. The water beyond the shore ice was a stunning aqua, the color Lenny imagined the Caribbean Sea to be, with a snowy shoreline decorated with huge white-covered black rocks. Snow-capped peaks muscled in close. Up high, Lenny saw ivory-colored dots scattered on the impossibly steep sides. Mountain goats. She reached into her pocket for her last, precious roll of film. She couldn't wait to take some pictures, but she had to be judicious with the film. Where would she start? The ice-glazed beach rocks that looked like seed pearls? The frozen fern fronds growing up from a snow-rounded black log? The turquoise water? She turned toward Matthew, started to say something, but he was gone. She turned, felt icy water slushing over her boots, and saw Matthew standing far down the beach, alone, his arms crossed. He had dropped his parka. It lay inches away from the incoming waves. His hair whipped across his face. She splashed through the water toward him, reached out.
"Matthew, you need to put your coat on. It's cold."
He yanked away from her touch, stumbled away.
"Get away from me," he said harshly. "I don't want you to see—"
"Matthew?"
She grabbed his arm, forced him to look at her. His eyes were red-rimmed from crying. He shoved her away. She stumbled back, tripped over a piece of driftwood, and fell hard. It happened fast enough to take her breath away. She lay there, sprawled on the frozen rocks, the cold water washing toward her, and stared up at him, her elbow stinging with pain.
"Oh my God,"
he said. Are you okay? I didn't mean to do that.
Lenny got to her feet, stared at him. I didn't mean to do that. The same words she'd heard spoken by her dad.
There's something wrong with me, Matthew said in a shaky voice. My dad blames me, and I can't sleep for shit, and without my mom, the house is so quiet that I want to scream.
Lenny didn't know how to respond.
I have nightmares about mom. I see her face under the ice, screaming. I don't know what to do. I don't want you to know.
Why?
I want you to like me. Sometimes you're the only thing. Oh, shit. Forget it.
He shook his head, started crying again.
I'm a loser.
No, you just need some help, she said. Who wouldn't after what you've been through?
My aunt in Fairbanks wants me to come live with her. She thinks I should play hockey and learn how to fly and see a shrink. I'd get to be with Allie, unless...
He looked at Lenny. So you'll go to Fairbanks, she said quietly. He sighed heavily. She thought maybe it had already been decided, and he'd been waiting to tell her all along.
I'll miss you.
He was going, leaving. At that, she felt an aching sense of sorrow expand in her chest. She would miss him so much, but he needed help. Because of her father, she knew what nightmares and sadness and a lack of sleep could do to a person, what a toxic combination that could be. What kind of friend would she be if she cared more about herself than him? I'll miss you, she wanted to say back to him, but what was the point? Words didn't help. After Matthew left, January got darker, colder. Lenny, would you set the table for dinner? Mama asked on a particularly cold and stormy night, with wind clawing to get in, snow swirling. She was frying up some Spam in a cast iron skillet, pressing down on it with her spatula. Two slices of Spam for three people was all they had. Lenny put down her social studies book and headed for the kitchen, keeping her eye on Dad. He paced along the back wall, his hands flexing and fisting, shoulders hunched, muttering to himself. His arms were stringy and thin, his stomach concave beneath his stained thermal underwear top. He hit his forehead hard with the heel of his palm, muttering something unintelligible. Lenny sidled around the table and turned into the small kitchen. She gave Mama a worried look.
What did you say?
Dad said, materializing behind Lenny, looming. Mama pressed the spatula down on a slice of Spam. A blob of grease popped up, landed on the back of her wrist. Ouch, damn it.
Are you two talking about me?
Dad demanded. Lenny gently took her father by the arm, led him to the table.
Your mother was talking about me, wasn't she? What did she say? Did she mention Tom?
Lenny pulled out a chair, eased him into it. She was talking about dinner, Dad, that's all. She started to leave. He grabbed her hand, pulled so hard she stumbled into him.
You love me, right?
Lenny didn't like the emphasis. Mama and I both love you. Mama showed up as if on cue, put the small plate of Spam alongside an enamel bowl of Thelma's brown sugar baked beans. Mama leaned down, kissed Dad's cheek, pressed her palm to his face. It calmed him, that touch. He sighed, tried to smile.
Smells good.
Lenny took her seat and began serving. Mama sat across from Lenny, picked at her beans, pushed them around on her plate, watching Dad. He muttered something under his breath. You need to eat something, Ernt.
I can't eat this shit.
He swept his plate sideways, sending it crashing to the floor. He shot up, strode away from the table, moving fast, grabbed his parka off of the wall hook, and wrenched the door open.
No goddamn peace, he said, leaving the cabin, slamming the door behind him.
Moments later, they heard the bus start up, spin out, drive away. Lenny looked across the table. Eat, Mama said, and bent down for the fallen plate and glass. After dinner, they stood side by side, washing and drying the dishes, putting them away on the shelves above the counter. You want to play Yahtzee? Lenny finally asked. Her question held as much enthusiasm as her mother's sad nod. They sat at the card table, playing the game for as long as either could stand the pretense. Lenny knew they were both waiting to hear the VW rumble back into the yard, worrying, wondering which was worse, him being here or him being gone.
"Where is he, you think?" Lenny asked after what seemed like hours.
"Mad Earls, if he could get up there. Or the Kicking Moose, if the roads were too bad."
"Drinking," Lenny said.
"Drinking."
"Maybe we should..."
"Don't," Mama said.
"Just go to bed, okay?"
She sat back, lit up one of her precious last cigarettes. Lenny gathered up the dice and scorecards and the little brown and yellow fake leather shaker and fit them all back into the red box. She climbed up the loft ladder and crawled into her sleeping bag without even bothering to brush her teeth. Downstairs, she heard her mother pacing. Lenny rolled over for her paper and a pen. Since Matthew had been gone, she'd written him several letters, which Large Marge mailed for her. Matthew wrote back religiously, short notes about his new hockey team and how it felt to be in a school that actually had sports teams. His handwriting was so bad she could barely decipher it. She waited impatiently for each letter and ripped them open immediately. She read each one over and over, like a detective, looking for clues and hints of emotion. Neither she nor Matthew knew quite what to say, how to use something as impersonal as words to create a bridge between their disparate lives, but they kept writing. She didn't yet know how he felt about himself or the move or the loss of his mother, but she knew that he was thinking about her. That was more than enough to begin with.
"Dear Matthew, today we learned more about the Klondike Gold Rush in school. Ms. Rhodes actually mentioned your grandma as an example of the kind of woman who set out north with nothing and found..."
She heard a scream. Lenny scrambled out of her sleeping bag and half slid down the ladder.
"There's something out there," Mama said, coming out of her bedroom, holding up a lantern. In its glow, she looked wild, pale.
A wolf howled. The wail undulated through the darkness. Close. Another wolf answered. The goat screamed in response, a terrible, keening cry that sounded human. Lenny grabbed the rifle from the rack and went to open the door.
"No," Mama yelled, yanking her back. "We can't go out there. They could attack us."
They shoved the curtains aside and opened the window. Cold blasted them. A sliver of moonlight shone down on the yard, weak and insubstantial, but enough to show them glimmers of movement. Light on silver fur, yellow eyes, fangs. Wolves moving in a pack toward the goat pen.
"Get out of here!" Lenny yelled.
She pointed her rifle and aimed at something, movement, and fired. The gunshot was a crack of sound. A wolf yelped, whined. She shot again and again, heard the bullets thwack into trees, pinging on metal. The screaming and bleeding of the goats went on and on. Quiet. Lenny opened her eyes and found that she was sprawled on the sofa with Mama beside her. The fire had gone out. Shivering, Lenny pushed back the pile of woolen and fur blankets and restarted the fire.
"Mama, wake up," Lenny said.
They were both wearing layers of clothing, but when they'd finally fallen asleep, they'd been so exhausted they'd forgotten the fire.
"We have to check outside."
Mama sat up.
"We'll go out when there's light."
Lenny looked at the clock. 6 a.m. Hours later, when dawn finally shed its slow, tentative light across the land, Lenny stepped into her white bunny boots and pulled the rifle down from the gun rack by the door, loading it. The closing of the chamber was a loud crack of sound.
"I don't want to go out there," Mama said.
"And no, you're not going alone, Annie Oakley." With a wan smile, she pulled on her boots and put on her parka, flipping the fur-lined hood up. She loaded up a second rifle and stood beside Lenny. Lenny opened the door, stepped out onto the snow-covered deck, holding the rifle in front of her. The world was white on white, snow falling, muffled, no sounds. They moved across the deck, down the steps. Lenny smelled death before she saw it. Blood streaked the snow by the ruined goat pen. Stanchions and gates had been torn apart, lay broken. There were feces everywhere, in dark piles, mingled with blood and gore and entrails. Trails of gore led into the woods. Wrecked. All of it. The pens, the chicken yard, the coop. Every animal gone, not even pieces left. They stared at the destruction until Mama said, "We can't stay out here. The scent of blood will draw predators." 11. Out on the road with her mother, walking, the two of them holding hands, Lenny felt like an astronaut moving through an inhospitable white landscape. Her breathing and their footsteps were all she heard. She tried to convince Mama to stop at either the Walker place or Large Marge's, but Mama wouldn't listen. She didn't want to admit what had happened. In town, everything was hunkered down. The boardwalk was a strip of snow-covered ice. Icicles hung from the eaves of the buildings, and snow coated every surface. The harbor was full of whitecaps that tossed the fishing boats from side to side, yanked at their lines. The Kicking Moose was already, or still, open. Light bled through the amber windows. A few vehicles were parked out front, trucks, snow machines, but not many. Lenny elbowed Mama, cocked her head at the VW bus parked near the saloon. Neither one of them moved. "He won't be glad to see us," Mama said. An understatement, Lenny thought. "Maybe we should go home," Mama said, shivering. Across the street, the door to the general store opened, and Lenny heard the faraway tinkling of the bell. Tom Walker stepped out of the store, carrying a big box of supplies. He saw them and stopped. Lenny was acutely aware of how she and Mama looked, standing knee-deep in snow, faces pink with cold, toques white and frozen. No one went walking in weather like this. Mr. Walker put his box of supplies in the back of his truck, shoved it up against the cab. Large Marge came out of the store behind him. Lenny saw the two of them look at each other, frown, and then head toward Lenny and her mom.
"Hey, Cora," Mr. Walker said. "You guys are out on a bad day."
A shudder of cold made Mama shake, her teeth chattered.
"Wolves were at our place last night. I don't know how many. They killed all the goats and chickens and ruined the pens and coop."
"Did Ernst kill any of them? Do you need help skinning? The pelts are worth—"
"No," Mama said. "It was dark. I'm just here to put in an order for more chicks."
She glanced at Large Marge.
"Next time you go to Homer, Marge, and for more rice and beans, but we're out of money. Maybe I can do laundry, or darning. I'm good with a needle and thread."
Lenny saw the way Large Marge's face tightened, heard the curse she muttered beneath her breath.
"He left you alone, and wolves attacked your place. You could have been killed."
"We were fine. We didn't go out," Mama said.
"Where is he?"
Mr. Walker asked quietly.
"We don't know," Mama lied.
"At the Kicking Moose," Large Marge said. "There's the VW.
"Tom, don't,"
Mama said, but it was too late. Mr. Walker was walking away from them, striding down the quiet street, his footsteps spraying up snow. The women, and Lenny, rushed along behind him, slipping and sliding in their haste.
"Don't, Tom, really," Mama said.
He wrenched open the saloon's door. Lenny instantly smelled damp wool and unwashed bodies and wet dog and burnt wood. There were at least 5 men in here, not counting the hunched, toothless bartender. It was noisy, hands thumping on whiskey barrel tables, a battery-operated radio blaring out "Bad, Bad Leroy Brown," men talking all at once.
"Yeah, yeah, yeah,"
Mad Earl was saying, his eyes glazed.
"The first thing they'll do is take over the banks and seize our land,"
Clyde said, the words slurred.
"They won't take my goddamn land."
This from her dad. He stood beneath one of the hanging lanterns, swaying unsteadily, his eyes bloodshot.
"No one takes what's mine."
"Ernst Albright, you piece of shit,"
Mr. Walker hissed. Dad staggered, turned. His gaze went from Mr. Walker to Mama.
"What the hell?"
Mr. Walker stormed forward, knocking chairs aside. Mad Earl scrambled to get out of his way.
"A pack of wolves attacked your place last night, Albright. Wolves,"
he said again. Dad's gaze went to Mama.
Wolves?
You are going to get your family killed, Mr. Walker said.
Look here.
No, you look,
Mr. Walker said.
You aren't the first Chichago to come up here with no goddamn idea what to do. You aren't even the stupidest, not by a long shot. But a man who doesn't take care of his wife? You got no right to say anything about keeping a woman safe, do you, Tom?
Dad said. Mr. Walker grabbed Dad by the ear and yanked so hard he yelped like a girl. He dragged Dad out of the smelly bar and into the street.
I should kick your ass around the block,
Mr. Walker said in a harsh voice.
Tom, Mama pleaded, please, don't make it worse.
Mr. Walker stopped, turned. He saw Mama standing there terrified, nearly in tears, and Lenny saw him pull himself from the brink of rage. She'd never seen a man do it before. He stilled, frowned, then muttered something under his breath and yanked Dad to the bus. Opening the door, he lifted Dad as easily as if he were a kid and shoved him into the passenger seat.
You're a disgrace.
He slammed the door shut and then went to Mama.
Will you be okay?
Lenny heard him ask. Mama whispered an answer Lenny couldn't hear, but she thought she heard Mr. Walker whisper, kill him, and saw Mama shake her head. Mr. Walker touched her arm, barely, just for a second, but Lenny saw. Mama gave him an unsteady smile and said,
Lenny, get in the bus,
without looking away from him. Lenny did as she was told. Mama climbed into the driver's seat and started the bus. All the way home, Lenny could see rage building in her father, see it in the way his nostrils flared every now and then, in the way his hands flexed and unflexed, hear it in the words he didn't say. He was a man who talked, especially lately, especially in the winter. He always had something to say. Now his lips were pressed tightly together. It made Lenny feel as if she were a coil of rope drawn around a cleat with the wind pulling at it, tugging, the rope creaking in resistance, slipping. If the line wasn't perfectly tied down, it would all come undone, be torn away. Maybe the wind would pull the cleat from its home in fury. There was still a bright pink mark on his ear, like a burn where Mr. Walker had taken hold and hauled Dad outside and humiliated him. Lenny had never seen anyone treat her father that way, and she knew there would be hell to pay for it. The bus jerked to a stop in front of the cabin, skidded sideways slightly in the snow. Mama turned off the ignition, and the silence expanded, grew heavier without the rattle and rumble of the engine to hide even a layer of its depth. Lenny and Mama got out of the bus fast, left Dad sitting there alone. As they neared the cabin, they saw again the destruction the wolves had caused. Snow lay over it all, in heaping handfuls on posts and planks, chicken wire stuck up in tangled heaps. A door lay half exposed. Here and there, in tree wells mostly, but on wood pieces too, there was blood turned to pink ice and frozen clumps of gore. A few colorful feathers could be seen. Mama took Lenny by the hand and led her across the yard and into the cabin. She shut the door hard behind them.
He's going to hurt you, Lenny said. Your dad is a proud man, to be humiliated in that way.
Seconds later, the door banged open. Dad stood there, his eyes bright with alcohol and rage. He was across the room in less time than it took Lenny to draw a breath. He grabbed Mama by the hair and punched her in the jaw so hard she slammed into the wall and collapsed to the floor. Lenny screamed and flew at him, her hands curling into claws.
No, Lenny!
Mama cried. Dad grabbed Lenny by the shoulders, shook her hard. Grabbing a handful of her hair, he yanked her across the floor, her feet tripping up on the rug, and shoved her outside into the cold. He slammed the door shut. Lenny threw herself at the door, battering it with her body until there was no strength left in her. She slumped to her knees beneath the small overhang of the roof. Inside, she heard a crash, something breaking, and a scream. She wanted to run away, get help, but that would only make everything worse. There was no help for them. Lenny closed her eyes and prayed to the god she had never been taught about. She heard the door unlock. How long had it been? Lenny didn't know. Lenny stumbled to her feet, frozen, and went into the cabin. It looked like a war zone. A broken chair, shattered glass across the floor, blood splattered on the sofa. Mama looked even worse. For the first time, Lenny thought he could kill her. Kill her. They had to get away. Now. Lenny approached her mother cautiously, afraid Mama was on the verge of collapse.
Where's Dad? Passed out. In bed. He wanted to punish me.
She turned away, ashamed.
You should go to bed.
Lenny went to the hooks by the door, got Mama's parka and boots.
Here, dress warmly. Why? Just do it.
Lenny moved quietly across the cabin, eased through the beaded curtain. Her heartbeat was a hammer hitting her ribcage as she looked around, saw what she'd come for. Keys, Mama's purse, not that there was any money in it. She grabbed it all and started to leave, and then stopped, turned back. She looked at her dad, sprawled face down on the bed, naked, his butt covered by a blanket. Burn scars puckered and twisted his shoulders and arms. The skin looked lavender blue in the shadows. Blood smeared the pillow. She left him there and went back to the living room, where Mama stood alone, smoking a cigarette, looking like she'd been beaten with a club.
Come on, Lenny said, taking her hand, giving a gentle, insistent tug.
Mama said,
Where are we going?
Lenny opened the door, gave Mama a little shove, then she reached down for one of the bug-out bags that were always by the door, a silent ode to the worst that could happen, a reminder that smart people were prepared. Hefting it onto her shoulder, Lenny leaned into the wind and snow and followed her mother out to the bus.
Get in,
she said gently. Mama climbed into the driver's seat and fit the key into the ignition, giving it a turn. As the VW warmed, she said dully,
Where are we going?
Lenny tossed the big pack into the back of the bus.
We're leaving, Mama.
What? Lenny climbed into the passenger seat.
We're leaving him before he kills you.
Oh, that. No.
Mama shook her head. He would never do that. He loves me.
I think your nose is broken. Mama sat there a minute longer, her face downcast. Then, slowly, she put the old VW in gear and turned toward the driveway. Headlights pointed to the way out. Mama started to cry in that quiet way of hers, as if she thought Lenny couldn't tell. As they drove into the trees, she kept glancing in the rearview mirror, wiping her tears away. When they reached the main road, a feral wind clawed at the bus. Mama worked the gas carefully, trying to keep the bus steady on the snow-packed ground. They passed the Walker gate and kept going. At the next bend in the road, a gust of wind punched the bus hard enough that they skidded sideways. A broken branch cracked into the windshield, got caught for a second in the wiper, was slammed up and down before it blew away, and revealed a giant bull moose in front of them, crossing the road on a turn. Lenny screamed a warning, but she knew it was too late. They had to either hit the moose or swerve too hard, and hitting an animal of that size would destroy the bus. Mama turned the steering wheel, eased her foot off the accelerator. The bus, never good in the snow, began a long, slow pirouette. Lenny saw the moose as they glided past him, his huge head inches from her window, his nostrils flaring.
Hang on!
Mama screamed. They hit a berm of snow and flipped over. The bus cartwheeled and plummeted off the road, landing in a screech of metal. Lenny saw it in pieces. Trees upside down, a snowy hillside, broken branches. She cracked her head into the window. When she regained consciousness, the first thing she noticed was quiet. Then the pain in her head and the taste of blood in her mouth. Her mother was slumped beside her. Both of them were in the passenger seat.
Lenny, are you okay? I think so.
She heard a hiss of sound, something gone wrong with the engine, and the whining creak of settling metal. Mama said,
The bus is lying on its side. I think we're on solid ground, but there could be farther to fall.
Another way to die in Alaska.
Will someone find us? No one is going to be out in weather like this. Even if they were, they wouldn't see us.
Moving cautiously, Lenny felt around for the heavy, clanking backpack, found it, and burrowed through it for the headlamp. Fitting it onto her head, she flicked the switch. The glow was too yellow, otherworldly. Mama looked freakish, her bruised face wax-like and melting. That was when Lenny saw the blood in Mama's lap and her broken arm. A bone stuck out from a tear in her sleeve.
Mama! Your arm! Your arm! Oh my God!
Take a breath. Look at it. Look good. It's a broken bone, and not my first. Lenny tried to settle her panic. She took a deep breath, submerged it.
What do we do?
Mama unzipped the backpack, began pulling out gloves and neoprene face masks with her good hand. Lenny couldn't look away from the splintered bone, from the blood soaking her mother's sleeve.
Okay, first, I need you to bind up my arm to stop the bleeding. You've learned how to do this, remember? Rip off the bottom of your shirt.
I can't. Lenora, Mama said sharply.
Rip your shirt.
Lenny's hands were shaking as she removed the knife from her belt and used it to start a rip in the fabric. When she had a long ribbon of flannel, she carefully scooted sideways.
Above the break. Tie it as tightly as you can.
Lenny fit the fabric around Mama's bicep, heard the groan of pain her mama made when Lenny tightened it.
Are you okay? Tighter.
Lenny yanked it as tightly as she could, tied it in a knot. Mama let out a shaky sigh and climbed back into the driver's seat.
Here's what we have to do. I'm going to break my window. You are going to climb over me and climb out. But... No buts, Lenny. I need you to be strong now, okay? You need it. I can't get out, and if we both stay here, we'll freeze to death. You need to go for help. I can't climb out of the bus with this broken arm. I can't do it. You can do this, Lenny.
Mama clamped a bloody hand over the tourniquet on her arm.
I need you to do it. You'll freeze while I'm gone, she said. I'm tougher than I look, remember? Thanks to your dad's Armageddon phobia, we've got a bug-out bag, a survival blanket, and food and water.
She gave a wan smile.
I will be fine. You go for help. Okay? Okay.
She tried not to be scared, but her whole body was shaking. She put on her gloves and her neoprene face mask and zipped up her parka. Mama pulled a life hammer from under her seat.
The Walker place is closest. It's probably less than a quarter of a mile from here. Go there. Can you make it?
Yeah. The bus made a dull, creaking sound, settled a little, moved.
I love you, baby girl.
Lenny tried not to cry.
Hold your breath. Go up.
Mama cracked the hammer against the window, hard, fast. The glass crackled into a webbed pattern, sagged. For a second, it held together, and then with a snap, it broke. Snow dumped into the bus, covering them. The cold was shocking. Lenny lurched forward, climbing over her mother, trying not to hit her arm, hearing her moan in pain, feeling her mother's good hand come up through the snow to push her. Lenny shimmied through the window. A branch smacked her in the face. She kept going, crawling on the side of the bus until she reached the hillside, which had been scraped and scarred by the plunging vehicle. Black dirt and broken branches and exposed roots. She launched herself forward, flailed for a higher foothold, climbed up the hillside. It seemed to take forever, clawing, clinging, hauling herself upward, breathing hard, sucking in snow. But finally she made it. She threw herself over the edge and landed face first in the snow, on the road. Gasping, she climbed onto all fours and got to her feet. White out. She put on her headlamp, which threw out a razor-thin glow. Wind tried to shove her off the road as she started her trek. Trees shuddered all around her, bent and cracked. Branches flew past her, scraping the torn ground. One hit her hard in the side, almost knocked her over. The light was her lifeline out here. Her chest began to ache from the frigid air she was breathing in. A stitch formed in her side. Sweat slid down her back and turned her hands clammy inside her gloves. She had no idea how long she'd been trudging forward, trying not to stop or cry or scream, when she saw the silver gate up ahead and the cow skull on it, wearing a bowler of snow. Lenny dragged the gate open, over the bumpy ground, bulldozing snow aside. She wanted to run forward, scream, help, but she knew better. Running could be mistake number two. Instead, she trudged through the knee-high snow. The forest on her right blocked some of the wind. It took at least 15 minutes to get to the Walker house. As she neared it, saw a light in the windows, she felt the sting of tears. Tears that froze in the corners of her eyes, hurting, blurring her vision. All at once, the wind died. The world drew in a quiet breath, leaving a near-perfect silence, broken only by her ragged breathing and the distant purr of the waves on a frozen shore. She stumbled past the snow-covered heaps of junk and old cars and past the beehives. At her approach, cows began lowing, stomping their hooves as they herded together in case she was a predator. Goats bleated. Lenny went up the ice-slick steps and pounded on the front door. Mr. Walker answered quickly, opened the door. When he saw Lenny, his face changed.
Jesus!
He pulled her into the house, through the Arctic entry lined with coats and hats and boots, and to the wood stove. Her teeth were chattering so hard she was afraid she'd bite off her tongue if she tried to talk, but she had to.
We crashed the bus. Mama's stuck.
Where?
She couldn't stop her tears now, or her shaking.
By the bend in the road, before Large Marge's place.
Mr. Walker nodded.
Okay.
He left her standing there, shaking and shivering just long enough for him to return in snow gear, carrying a big mesh bag slung over one shoulder. He went to the ham radio and found an open frequency. Staticky sound crackled through, then a high-pitched squeal.
Large Marge,
he said into a handheld mouthpiece.
Tom Walker here. Car crash near my place on the main road. Need help. On my way. Over.
He lifted his thumb from the button, static again. Then he repeated the message and hung up the mouthpiece.
Let's go.
Could Dad hear that? Was he listening or still passed out? Lenny glanced worriedly outside, half expecting him to materialize. Mr. Walker grabbed a striped red and yellow and white wool blanket from the back of the sofa and wrapped it around Lenny.
Her arm is broken. She's bleeding.
Mr. Walker nodded. Taking Lenny's gloved hand in his own, he pulled her out of the warm house and back out into the frigid cold. In the garage, his big truck started right up. The heat came on, blanketing the cab, making Lenny shiver harder. She couldn't stop shaking as they drove down the driveway and turned out onto the main road, where wind beat at the windshield and whistled through every crevice in the metal frame. Tom eased up on the gas. The truck slowed, grumbled, and whined.
There,
she said, pointing to where they'd gone off the road. As Mr. Walker pulled over to the side, headlights appeared in front of them. Lenny recognized Large Marge's truck.
You stay in the truck,
Mr. Walker said.
No!
Stay here.
He grabbed his mesh bag and left the truck, slamming the door behind him. In the glow of headlights, Lenny saw Mr. Walker meet Large Marge in the middle of the road. He dropped his bag, took out some coiled-up rope. Lenny pressed herself to the window, her breath clouding the view. Impatiently, she wiped it away. Mr. Walker tied one end of the rope around a tree and the other end around his own waist in an old-school belay. With a wave to Large Marge, he lowered himself over the embankment and disappeared. Lenny wrenched the door open and fought the wind, blinded by snow, to cross the road. Large Marge stood at the edge of the embankment. Lenny peered over the edge, saw broken trees and the bus's shadowy bulk. She shined her flashlight down, but it wasn't enough light. She heard metal creaking, a thump, and a woman's scream. And then, Mr. Walker reappeared in the feeble beam of light with Mama bound to his side, tied to him. Large Marge grabbed the rope in her gloved hands, pulled them up, hand over hand, until Mr. Walker stumbled back up onto the road. Mama slumped at his side, unconscious, held up by Mr. Walker's grip.
She's in bad shape,
Mr. Walker yelled into the wind.
I'll take her by boat to the hospital in Homer.
What about me?
Lenny screamed. They seemed to have forgotten she was there. Mr. Walker gave Lenny one of those "you poor kid" looks Lenny knew so well.
You come with me.
The small hospital waiting room was quiet. Tom Walker sat beside Lenny, his parka puffed up in his lap. First, they had driven to Walker Cove, where Mr. Walker had carried Mama down to the dock and placed her gently on the bench seat in his aluminum boat. They had sped around the craggy shoreline to Homer. At the hospital, Mr. Walker carried Mama up to the front desk. Lenny ran along beside, touching Mama's ankle, her wrist, whatever she could reach. A native woman with two long braids sat at the desk, clacking away on a typewriter. Within moments, a pair of nurses came to take Mama away. "Now what?" Lenny asked.
"Now we wait."
They sat there, not talking. Each breath Lenny took felt difficult, as if her lungs had a mind of their own and might stop working. There was so much to be afraid of. Mama's injury, losing Mama, Dad coming in. Don't think about that, how mad he will be, what he'll do when he realizes they were leaving, and the future. How would they leave now?
"Can I get you something to drink?"
Lenny was so deep in the pit of her fear that it took her a second to realize Mr. Walker was talking to her. She looked up, bleary-eyed.
"Will it help?"
"Nope."
He reached over for her hand, held it. She was surprised enough by the unexpected contact that she almost pulled away, but it felt nice, too, so she held his hand in return. She couldn't help wondering how different life would be with Tom Walker as her dad.
"How's Matthew?" she asked.
"He's getting better, Lenny. Jenny's brother is going to teach him to fly. Matthew is seeing a therapist. He loves your letters. Thanks for keeping in touch with him."
She loved his letters, too. Sometimes it felt like hearing from Matthew was the best part of her life.
"I miss him."
"Yeah, me too."
"Will he come back?"
"I don't know. There's so much up there. Kids his age, movie theaters, sports teams. And I know Maddie. Once he takes control of an airplane for the first time, he will fall in love. He's a kid who loves adventure."
"He told me he wanted to be a pilot."
"Yeah. I wish I'd listened to him a little better,"
Mr. Walker said with a sigh.
"I just want him to be happy."
A doctor walked into the waiting room, approached them. He was a heavy-set man with a barrel chest that strained to be freed from the confines of his blue scrubs. He had the rugged, hard-drinking look of a lot of the men who lived in the bush, but his hair was closely cropped, and except for a bushy gray mustache, he was clean-shaven.
"I'm Dr. Irving. You must be Lenny,"
he said, pulling off his surgical cap. Lenny nodded, got to her feet.
"How is she?"
"She's going to be fine. Her arm is set in a cast now, so she'll need to slow down for 6 weeks or so, but there should be no lasting damage."
He looked at Lenny.
"You saved her, young lady. She wanted to make sure I told you that."
"Can we see her?" Lenny asked.
"Of course. Follow me."
Lenny and Mr. Walker followed Dr. Irving down the white hallway and into a room that read recovery on the door. He pushed open the door. Mama was in a fabric-curtained cubicle. She was sitting upright in a narrow bed, wearing a hospital gown. A warming blanket lay across her lap. Her left arm was bent at a 90-degree angle, and she was encased in a cast of white plaster. Something wasn't quite right with her nose, and both eyes showed signs of bruising.
"Lenny,"
she said, her head lolling a little to the right on the stack of pillows behind her. She had the lazy, unfocused look of someone who'd been drugged.
"I told you I was tough,"
she said. Her voice was a little misshapen.
"Oh, baby girl, don't cry."
Lenny couldn't help herself. Seeing her mother like this, living through the crash, all she could think about was how fragile Mama was and how easily she could be lost. It made her think sharply, keenly, of Matthew, and how quickly and unexpectedly death could sweep in. She heard the doctor say goodbye and leave the room. Mr. Walker went to Mama's bedside.
"You were leaving him, weren't you? What other reason would there be to be out in this weather?"
"No."
Mama shook her head.
"I could help you," he said. "We could help you, all of us. Large Marge used to be a prosecutor. I could call the police, tell them he hurt you. He does, doesn't he? You didn't break your nose in the accident, did you?"
"The police can't help,"